growth requires more than capital.
Why do we call it the cheat code? Nobody said growth had to be fair.
Revenue solves everything.
Welcome to the cheat code. What was our fastest path to revenue?
We tend to like to do things the hard way.
What's the cheat code? It's giving yourself an unfair advantage over the others.
What is it that really works, and how are we going to grow these organizations?
That's our cheat code. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Cheat Code, talking about building up partnerships, how to, what, when, how, why, where, all the good things. You've got me, Josh Wagner, Justin Gray, and Sean Kester all on board for what has turned out to be a really fun series of podcasts for the group. So just so everyone knows, today I'm homering big time. I got the Arizona Diamondbacks shirt on, game one of the World Series tonight.
Everyone in Arizona is a Diamondbacks fan right now. What the hell are you talking about?
Hey, I'll take all the bandwagon fans we can get, man.
I think everyone in Atlanta is too.
Yeah,
because they knocked off the Phillies.
Knocked off the big bad Phillies. No, I love it.
And then I just love that Sean's also broadcasting live from a cabin strip club. Like, what's up with the neon? And is that a pole or a wood-burning stove?
It could be either. It gets a little hot. The person QT's who was in charge hot. of the renovations, we gave a bit of liberties to, and I guess he was very passionate around putting some colored accent lights in there. So here we are.
Here we are. Love it. Don't turn back now.
Nope.
No. Sweet. All right. So what are we talking about today, guys?
Yeah. Today we're really going into how do we find the right partner, and I know we've maybe teased around it a little bit on prior episodes, but maybe we kick off with Justin, Sean, whoever wants to go, your thoughts on where do you start for finding the right partner?
I think it comes from outcomes. I think we talked about this a bit before too.
Sean loves the word outcomes.
I mean, it's
we're going to have an outcome counter in the bottom left hand corner.
It has to, what are you trying to achieve? I think that's where you start.
Okay.
Well, every organization like is trying to achieve revenue, right? Like, I mean, when you're talking about partner and like, again, like this whole notion of like partner being this insular thing and like this node within an organization is where I think, you know, immediately gets you down the wrong path. So like, yes, we're all trying to grow revenues. Yes, we want to glean trust from people who have it in relation to the buyer that we share. And I think that's where you have to start in that process, even from a conceptual standpoint, right? So, hey, and I'll talk through analogy of just one of our existing portcos and you know, the dozens and dozens of companies that we've consulted with in the past as well. Like, you have to look at what value you provide to that customer organization. And what are those adjacent, you know, value multipliers? So whether it's, you know, what I find is an interesting partnership path from a go-to-market standpoint as well as a customer success standpoint, and I think we talked a bit about this last time, is, you know, your consultancies, your agencies, your services folks that like really oftentimes are responsible for generating better usage and better returns from insert solution here. And so we've got, you know, a existing portco where they have a technology solution, but, you know, like a lot of solutions, the inputs for that are business process. They are strategy. They are like, what do you, you know, the things that platform requires to, you know, facilitate workflow and provide analytics and so on. Like, you need to have a really strong input there. And this just happens to be a compensation example. And so, you know, their platform gets physicians paid. Long story short, physician comp looks just like sales comp. And therefore there's all these performance and organizational strategy inputs. Like, we want to drive better patient outcomes. Bing! That we want to drive, you know, patient better NPS. We want to drive, you know, certain focuses in terms of procedure and so on. And so like, how do they build those into their compensation plan? But how you do that, there are big consultancies that actually design those models, right? And so if I'm selling a physician compensation solution, I want to take a look at who my customer is reliant on for the inputs, the outputs, the, you know, the multipliers for my solution. And that happens to be one of them. So if you're thinking about partnership, not only in a who can refer me, you know, that next deal, but really who makes my customer better, who multiplies my value, and who should I align myself with across that customer journey, that's the first insight that you really have to capture. You know, and if you're thinking about partner in that silo where it's like, who can drive me revenues, it's always going to be one-sided. It's always going to be, you know, walled off from the true like essence of the company. And again, like we talked about the first time, like this has to be cultural. It has to be something that's integrated across the org. So focus on the customer. And I think that's the first step in defining that partner go-to-market strategy.
Yeah. I mean, filling a gap in access are big things that I think about, right? Like you mentioned just the customer. So what gap do you fill? Where are your own gaps in terms of your product or solution? So how do you find others to do that? But if you double down on the example you gave with the position comp platform, that's a startup, right? There's some competitors in the marketplace. The market is getting more educated around this type of solution. So it's evolving. But I think about access, right? Those comp solutions that you talked about, they have the trusted relationship. So they have more access to that industry, and they can help double down on education. They can help double down on getting exposure to all those different things. I think that's another thing that you got to think about. Just if you're the big guy or the small guy, where are you on that spectrum? And are you helping someone provide more access, or are you looking to gain access? And that changes a little bit how you enter that partner conversation.
Yeah, good point. I think the other thing there that we don't focus enough on is just, you know, in that case, the founder, the CEO of the organization, right? Like so much success or failure is driven by how that person is thinking about those gaps and that access and how they fill them and driving what that program is really going to look like, which I, you know, if you think about through that analogy, like the critical factor in even starting to establish those relationships, frankly, was like CEO to CEO founder fit. You know what I mean? Like right out of the gate, like, you know, are we aligned from a methodology standpoint, from a strategy standpoint? Do we kind of hit it off? And then how do you like filter that relationship and that focus and just like the intense proximity throughout the entire organization? Because like, again, I think that's where it's like, oh, I'm going to reach out to a partner if they bring me a deal or if they happen to be selling into that organization at the same time. You have to want to bring in those partners so that you go through this process of determining who your partners are by understanding the customer really deeply. But that's a commitment to like, I want to, you know, we've got a different org that we're also working with where it's just like, Josh, I think you, maybe it was actually the same company, but like you were going through their pipeline and just socialize that out to a partner. And it turned out like, you know, 50% of the folks on the list were joint customers. Yep. And so like how much insight can you garner from just tapping into that channel?
Yeah, something good's going to come from that, right? It's a simple thing, but something good's going to come from it, whether it's accelerating a cycle, getting access you didn't otherwise have, getting them into a cycle that maybe they had stalled. You never know. Like just it is kind of those simple things. And it comes down to visibility. So, you know, if you've identified this right partner, how do you stay visible with them? It is a lot of little things that add up over time, but I think we're maybe getting a little far down the rabbit hole there in terms of identification of the right partner. So we've talked about outcomes. There's another check mark. Are you going to put a counter on this in post-production? We started with outcomes. Then we've talked about, you know, Phil, what are you trying to achieve? And then the customer, right? What is the customer? What solution are you providing? What gaps are in your solution or potential partner solutions? And how do we go out in the marketplace? What are we missing?
I think it's business gaps, like gaps in the business period, right? So if you think about it at a high level, like what have been your overall strategy of your business? Are you able to accomplish in the next 1 to 2 years? And what things are you going to have to put on the side in order to achieve them? It could be product things. It could be going into a new vertical. There's a lot of different paths there. When you just think about it from a high level, what things are you able to do right now? And the way we think about it is like, do you build, do you buy, or do you partner? And so partner is an easy way to kind of start to navigate those kind of new grounds and say, you know, for example, we don't have the resources to go build this thing, or we don't have the resources to go sell into this right now. However, we know that's something we want to do. Let's go find a partner who may be able to ease us into this or be able to fill that gaps for now. And then ultimately what that can become is a channel on a few different levels. One, it could be a sustainable channel from a partner perspective and have that ongoing. Two, it can validate an internal channel that you were going to create and put resources behind. Or three, it could be an acquisition play and something where you say, hey, this partner's been so great. This is something that our customers need. This is now core to our business. We should bring them in-house, right? And so I think a lot of times, just starting with the question of, you know, when you think about the overall business strategy, what can we achieve in the next 1 to 2 years, and what things are we pushing to the side, and using that as an opportunity to identify potential partners.
All right. Let's say we've aligned at the high level, right? We're filling gaps. It aligns with our business strategy. It aligns with their business strategy. And that's phase one of saying these partners are worth talking to, right? Or at least engaging in a conversation. So the next layer down from that, I think, Justin, you alluded to a little bit, was fit. How do you determine what a good fit might be? Because I feel like a lot of stuff is brushed under the rug at this stage, right? It's just like, well, hey, this is like...
I mean, there's fit at multiple different levels there, right? Like, you know, oftentimes we think about, you know, from a solution, like Sean said, you know, do you build, do you buy, do you partner, so on and so forth. Like, and so you identify these opportunities just because there's an opportunity there, just because it makes sense on paper, doesn't mean that there's going to be fit within that organization. Actually, someone asked this question on LinkedIn the other day, right? Like, if you've got the best partner in the world from a non-paper fit perspective, right? Like, you know that your customer's using them, you know that their solution is complementary, you know, you share the same buyer, like everything's, you know, all the stars are aligned, but they just won't play ball. Is that something that you just kind of give up on at that point? And I think, you know, the short answer is maybe. Because, you know, if you get that fit at the executive level, which I think is really hard to shake as you go down through the organization, if you do truly get that alignment, and again, I'm fully cognizant that, like, super large organizations, that's difficult to do. You're probably not accessing the CEO, but like, who are those influencers that you can access, right? Like, maybe it's CRO, maybe it's SVP of sales or marketing or whatever it happens to be. Like, you've got to figure out if you have a point that has enough influence within that organization over the areas that you need to speak to. Again, it could be on the product side, and really make a consorted effort to align and partner at that level from a strategic outcomes perspective. Like, beep. The key is, like, can you get them understanding, like, that value is going to be, you know, juice is going to be worth the squeeze ultimately. And if so, then I think that's harder to shake as you go down those levels. You're going to see less, like, rejection from the organ level, because, you know, you've already aligned at a level that really can make organizational change. But it still happens, right? Like, you've still, at the end of the day, you're probably working with a seller or a marketer or, you know, an engineer, whatever it happens to be, like, and sometimes they just don't jive. Like, oh, I've never had good experiences in the past with partners, and they've screwed up my deals and this, that, and the other. So you will run into those friction points, but you have to try to overcome those by understanding what is the value to them. You know, like, value to the customer is great, and the further up in the org that you go, like, they're going to be more driven by that. But at the end of the day, everyone wants to know, like, how are you making my job easier? And so that's why I think about the value prop for partnerships kind of evolving. It always has to be focused on the customer. You have to know what that joint value is, how you measure it, how you articulate it, and how you do that together. But also, like, all right, you're a seller trying to make your nut on a monthly basis. How do I help you do that, right? How do I recognize you when you help me do what I want to do? What am I bringing to you? And I probably mentioned this before. If not, like, I'll do it 50 million times. Like, giving to get is the number one, you know, dichotomy shift I think that needs to happen within partnerships. Like, we have to be thinking about what we can provide to each one of those nodes to ensure that we have the best chance at really establishing cultural and organizational fit.
Yeah, maybe I'll throw an example at you guys, get your take on it, because you mentioned earlier the idea of the partner just doesn't seem to want to play ball. And So, you know, you're the smaller player,
time, right?
Yeah. Right. So real life example in our portfolio, right? So we've got a pretty robust partner ecosystem. One of the tech partners is a much larger organization than us, been getting some traction lightly through the sales organization, doing some co-deals, referrals and whatnot. Founder in our portfolio gets a meeting with the CEO of the partner, you know, set out the stage and just, hey, what does a good partner look like for you? What makes you care about them? And he said, well, we've got this one partner and their name just started coming up all the time within like 500 of our customers. You do that, we're good to go. What do you say to that?
I mean, it's not uncommon, right? Like this is why you get like the, you know, in my past life, like the Deloitte and the Accenture and like, you know, like you've got technology organizations just seeking out those logos because they've got such a great, you know, customer base and brand equity. You have to focus like, and I think, you know, we made this recommendation in that instance, like you've got to work with what you've got. I think the worst thing to do is try to, you know, fake it till you make it in that scenario. And it's like, you know, oh, you know, suddenly you start resurrecting every logo that you've ever talked to. And like, these are folks that we're working with and, you know, we could potentially bring to you like that. That's going to come home to roost pretty quickly. So I think like, even if you've got like one or two customers that you share in common and you can go, you know, hopefully you've gone really deep in terms of delivering value there. You've got some advocates on your side and you can start to surface the stories that you do have. It's kind of like the age old, I want to see a reference that looks exactly like me. I'm a nonprofit, you know, a shoestring provider that only sells black shoes. Like, give me, you know, a reference of who you've worked with that does that exact same thing. It's like, I don't have that. I'm a startup. I've got, you know, a dozen, two dozen customers. And regardless of your stage, right? Like, you're never going to find those like right down the center, like show me someone that looks exactly like me. But like, here's the customers I do have that share that use case. Here's what I've been able to do for them. There are my raving fans. Like, let's see what your CSAT is with that customer or your NPS, right? Like, let's put a plan together on how I can raise that and just like amplify the successes that you do have. And then again, like what's the value that you can provide to that individual? Like, hey, I've got two other clients that don't have a solution that, you know, is in the realm that you guys operate in. Let me give those to you. Let's work on how we can, you know, get some traction there. I just think you got to start where you're at.
Yeah. I mean, talk about customers. You'd be surprised how few organizations don't even put just customer overlap in one of the first, you know, few steps of trying to identify a partner, right? They'll have these conversations. They'll say, hey, listen, you're bigger than me. You can walk me into all these things. And they come back and after they've gone through a whole bunch of mess, they'll do a customer overlap and they realize they've got, you know, 2% of their customers that are overlapped. And at that point, you've got to kind of say that there's a huge misfit here because you're not even going after the same market, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's what I hate about, you know, when you're working, a partner approaches you and they're like, you know, oh, I saw you're working with Comcast, right? But like, they sell into IT and you sell into marketing or sales, right? Like, it's like, right, we're not sharing the buyer. There's not a lot of synergy there. And that's where I think that big logo or established player can really fall down, right? Like, if you can prove that like you own the mindset of the buyer that buys their solution, that's so much more valuable than, you know, we've got 80% of our logos that overlap, but we serve two different buying centers. There's, you know, like, I think it's fairly impossible if you don't already have the relationship at like a high level, like CEO, like that spans the organization, to say, I'm going to hop from marketing over to IT. Like, that just rarely works. And so I think you've got to amplify those overlap pieces that really matter.
Yeah, the buying center is a big one. I agree with you.
For sure.
You're selling into marketing and they're selling into HR. It's just not going to be a good overlap. You're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, we've all been on the other end of that, you know, or the other side of that coin, right? Where it's like, hey, can you provide an intro? And it's like, I can send an email to my contact, but like, it's probably not going to make it into the area of the business that you serve. So again, but that all should be dealt with when you're evaluating, you know, like if it's customer driven, It, you know, again, like the IPP or ideal partner profile gets a lot of like immediate pushback because it's like, oh, that's a recipe for doing things in a silo. Well, just don't do it, you know, from the customer's perspective, the closer you can get to the customer and really understand like, yeah, we use, you know, who's your best vendor at this point, or, you know, who do you have the strongest relationship with, and use insights like that to develop your partner program and how you're going to serve that buyer. And that will be far more successful than just like, I want to go target the biggest, you know, logos that serve my joint customer.
So in a prior episode, we talked a little bit about types of partnerships, starting with, you know, co-marketing, then we had referral, we had resell, and then we had co-sell type of things, right? Does that change, you know, are you identifying that on the front end, or are you identifying the partner on the front end? Because I think that might change a little bit about how you approach the situation.
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, yeah. Go ahead.
No, yeah. I was going to say the same thing, right? Like you have to have an understanding of what your go-to-market channels are. But a lot of times that's going to also be informed by the types of partners that you have and who those partners really are. Like, are they experts at, like, do they operate solely through a resell model? Like, we've got that variance in a Portco as well, like where they only operate, you know, in a resell model. So it's like, does that make strategic sense for our business? Yes, no. Okay, great. That's how we're going to have to engage with that partner.
Yeah, it's kind of like a crawl, walk, run scenario a lot of times with these partnerships. I mean, there's, you know, resell sounds great. It's a more mature cycle, right? And you've got to build trust on the kind of the entry levels, and you've got to make sure you can work together and that the value prop is, you know, resonates with the buyer and everything in between before you can get there. So, I mean, I think you have those things in mind when you go into it and say, this would be a great outcome. But at the end of the day, you're looking for that fit at some of the easier stages of a partnership.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm curious what you guys' thoughts are on resale in general, because I feel like I was actually having a coffee meeting this morning, and someone asked about a potential portco of ours, and they're like, what do you think the revenue breakdown is? You know, once these guys are over the next hurdle, you know, mature. And I was like, I think it's, you know, 70-30, like partner direct to market. And they're like, really? Like, I was like, well, hold on, let me qualify what I'm, you know, what I'm saying in terms of partner. Because when I talk partner, certainly in the early stage, I think co-sell. And immediately, you know, the mindset of a lot of people, and this individual in particular, went to resell. Like, you know, the white labeling of the product, and they're, or, you know, it doesn't even have to be white label, but they've got a SKU, they're selling it, you know, on their paper, they're handling probably the lion's share, if not all of that sales process. That tends to be like where people's mindsets go first. And personally, I think finding an organization that's mature enough to support a true resale of a product in the early stages, like seed, you know, even, you know, like, so let's call that like $10 million and under, you know, seed series A, is really, really difficult. Curious to get you guys' take on that as well.
I think you have to matter so much and be so important to get someone's attention in true resell. Cause the companies that are mature enough to resell are resell organizations. Right. Like people are familiar in the IT space of like CDW or things like that. Like those are resellers, and that's all they do for a living, is they resell other people's stuff. Mm-hmm. To be a new vendor to a company that resells stuff, you better make some splash. Right. And as a startup, that's really hard to do from an enablement standpoint, from a comp standpoint, from just so many different things. So I like your point, Justin, like co-sell, get it on your paper, use the partner as an amplifier in the process. You know, amplify each other, help each other sell solutions and package it together. That's early stage. That's all you can really do. I mean, you can get into resell, but it's hard.
I mean, from a technology standpoint, your whole product has to be architected in a way to support a resell model, from how you take in payments to how it, you know, APIs that are available, how it can be integrated, et cetera. You know, those things have to be thought about. And quite frankly, when you're trying to take a product to market, that's not the right way to do it initially if you just want to have any direct go-to-market, right? And so I think there's a huge hurdle from a technology perspective. The second piece is just that, you know, especially for early stage, you lose you lose your finger on the pulse of the customer and the entire experience that they're able to deliver during that buying cycle. And that's scary. And so, it sounds great, like having someone else go and sell your stuff, like it's a lower cost of sale, at least theoretically. But ultimately, I think there's a lot of red flags in there that you have to get through from a direct model to even know what a good reseller would look like.
I mean, what I always think about is how difficult it is. You know, I'm sure, you know, like I know we've all run sales teams and I'm sure many folks listening have, like, think about the challenges that you had just trying to get your internal sellers to sell something in line with product or service mm-hmm. expectations. And then you think about like shipping that outside the organization is just really scary without like a massive enablement and training and, you know, management process in place. And like when you're dealing with, you know, certainly in the early stage, couple member sales teams with like no enablement and like not a lot of, you know, your training is like hop in and do it. That just is really, really scary to me. I think it's a recipe for, to your point, like really losing touch with what the customer's expectations are and how they were sold in a worst case scenario. In a best case scenario, like losing connection to like brand and who you are versus the core platform they're selling. So I agree. It's a very mature motion. And, you know, unless you're built specifically to support that go-to-market channel or you become very mature, I think it's, you know, something that's better left to the much later stages, if at all.
Just think about the implementation ramifications. We hear internally, oh, sales sold something we can't do. What happens if that right. goes out to thousands of people who don't even have a pulse on your implementation process? How are you built on the back end to support that? Like that could get
yeah. And if it's a product gap, you know what I mean? Like, let's say, you know, your solution has weak analytics. And so you partnered, you know, to fill that gap. Suddenly like that depth of product knowledge becomes really, really important because it's like, oh, can you do this? Oh yeah, absolutely. Like we use, you know, so-and-so, we partner with so-and-so to bring that, but it's like, do you really understand like the client's question, how that's going to impact your platform? I mean, we've run into this in the past, certainly on the services side where it's, you know, oh yeah, that overpromise, and then suddenly you're yeah. stuck holding the bag, which is a really mm-hmm. painful area to be.
Yeah. One thing I want to touch on before we hop here is Justin, you and I have certainly a bias on the technology services partnership, right? Like it's kind of got a natural, it makes sense. You know, you have this product that has some things that need to be wrapped around it. You have a service organization that specializes in that area of expertise. It makes some sense, right? But in the last call or last episode, Sean brought up the idea of technology partners and integration partners. How do you think about that, right? There may not be a co-sell. There may not be I don't know. Talk to me a little bit about the integration partnership. How do you identify them? What's the value? What's the value exchange?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same idea of build, buy, or partner at a high level, right? When you think about product strategy. And so when you think about, I think the way that our mental map worked is we created basically all these adjacent categories to the category that we were, right? We had sales engagement and there's all these other ones. There's video, there's SMS, there's telephony, there's all these different channels and things that our customer needs. So we had to decide which was core to our product and our platform and which things could we partner and then add on, right? And so we weren't going to be the best at all of them. We weren't going to build all of them. But they all needed to talk to each other as being a system of record. And I think a little bit we talked about before is like, are you a point solution or are you the platform itself? And if you're the platform itself, you better make sure that everyone else is adjacent to you has connectivity into it and one way or another in order to support the customer themselves. If you're a point solution, you need to figure out where the customer is living and making sure that you live in all of those places. So it's one is, do we bring everything in or do we make sure that we live where they live? And when it comes down to it, it's really pretty much customer driven. So you look at what are the most used technologies in each of the adjacent categories. You make sure they have a way to integrate, and then you go out and you sell to them. You either sell that you want to go and build the connector or that they should come into your program. There's a program built around it and there's benefits around it to entice them to come in there. But I think at its core, you have to figure out, you know, are you the primary work area for their daily tasks? And if so, make sure that you can bring in everything else they use to talk to it. Or are you a piece that goes into a, you know, a bigger platform and make sure that you live in there as well?
I always thought of, and maybe this is an oversimplified view, but I always like to think of partnerships as objection handling. Like, oh, I can't do that, yeah, but I have a partner who can do it. Did you find that to be valuable on the tech partner side? Because I could see that having an interesting application.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so when you think about, you know, what were we driving for with a lot of these when we're thinking about an ROI model? A lot of it was competitive advantage. So we wanted to be able to walk into a deal and have someone give an objection and says, hey, I need this connect into my video platform, my SMS platform. And I needed it to hook into my BI tool, right? And for us, we say we have a partner that does that. And for that to be a partner that that our competitor doesn't have. So it was almost like, you know, land grab from a partnership perspective and making sure you had more integrations than they did, so that when you got into these unique configurations that your customers have, that you could fit those needs. But ultimately, Josh, you're correct. It is objection handling, right? Like, we don't do it, but we have someone that can help you do it. And so, you know, some of the benefits of having those close relationships is then you can get preferred pricing or be able to refer them into it. And you can create these other little channels on the side, but it's not going to be a huge revenue channel innately in itself.
Yeah. Well, that can be we'll create something new, the cheat of the day, objection handling. But I do like that, right?
I also think, like, a lot of times when you do have those embedded partnerships, or at least this has been my experience, it, you know, because you're not touching the customer, it becomes like this arbitrage for revenue. And before long, you just kind of let, oh, they sell a ton of our product, like they're doing great. And like, you just don't treat that with the care that I think there's the potential for, right? Like, so like the more that you can surround that, like if you've got a great, you know, resale partner or integration partner, and they're like awesome at handling that, those objections that they run into via your product. Like, I think over time, the tendency is to like, great, they're mature and they're functioning. But like the more that you can stay close to that partner and just again, educate, enable, like reward and really just curate that relationship over time, the better the outcome will be. And again, I think that's across the board in partnerships. Like, just the more time and effort that you can put into those relationships, learn from them, enable those teams, reward them, that's the opportunity to really change, you know, how channel has functioned for the past, you know, 50 years here. It's just with effort and again, making that cultural, that like, these guys are important to us. They are our customer within that equation, and, you know, surrounding them as such.
Yeah. It's not a set it and forget it. Like, too many people treat it.
That's why I think the objection handling thing is such a great cheat, because if you're trying to get salespeople to help you sell your solution or get you in the door or whatever it is, like, you need to give them triggers. Like, what do I listen for you to say, hey, it's worth introducing so-and-so partner. So, hey, listen for these three objections. You hear one of those, just say, hey, I know Josh at so-and-so. This is who you need to talk to, right? So that
and vice versa, you know what I mean? Like, what are you really understanding what they're hearing from that joint customer? How's that inform your product roadmap? How's that inform how you message and talk to the market directly about that product? Like, just such a hack for, you know, what a lot of marketing organizations spend a lot of time on in a silo, which is messaging, right? Your customer is going to tell you the best messaging.
Yeah. And I think the idea of you can't set it, forget it, that gives you an automatic feedback loop. When that happens, you solve a problem, you handle an objection, you get a win. That win, to your messaging point in marketing, that needs to be circulated throughout the entire team. You know, call the five other reps that you were working with who don't want to work with you and say, hey, I told you this is a real deal here, right? Like, we did this deal. So
yeah, and that stuff works like from a Slack, from a newsletter, you know what I mean? Just like, how are you, you know, ubiquitous in terms of exposure to those wins and trying to suck in those folks that maybe aren't as initially receptive.
Absolutely. All right, guys, anything else we're missing for how to find the right partners?
No, just go do it, man.
Yeah, super, you'll find easy. The right partners. Yeah, so the quick recap at the high level, start with what? The outcomes. Does it align with your business strategy? Are you serving the same customer? And not only the same customer, but the same buyer within that customer was a big one that we pulled out of there. Are you filling a gap for that solution in the market or vice versa? And then as you start to drill down a little bit deeper, thinking about what role you're looking in that partnership. Are you the platform? Or are you the point solution? Are you looking for co-marketing, co-sell, referral, resell? and just start to surround those individual potential partnerships with that matrix. And I think even a matrix type of mentality might help you quantify some of those types of things. And then cheat of the day, be an objection handler for your partners.
I mean, you don't have to look far to see these things, you know, in motion. Like obviously Sean's GC had a referral partnership with a neon organization and we're seeing the results of that live on this call.
Huge, I should have changed the lights during it.
Huge kickback.
Yeah.
He might have made his year.
Big neon.
Awesome.
He's got
control. All right. Well, everybody, thanks for listening to The Cheat Code. Josh, Justin, and Sean, if you like what we're talking about, please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a like, a subscribe, and maybe even a review. That helps amplify our message. Until next time, thanks for listening to The Cheat Code.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Growth requires more than capital.
Why do we call it the cheat code? Nobody said growth had to be fair.
Revenue solves everything.
Welcome to the cheat code. What was our fastest path to revenue?
We tend to like to do things the hard way.
What's the cheat code? It's giving yourself an unfair advantage over the others.
What is it that really works, and how are we going to grow these organizations?
That's our cheat code.